Set for argument on case number 89149, Republican National Committee et al. Versus Francisco Aguilar et al. Just a reminder that we are set for argument with 17 minutes per side, the first 2 minutes uninterrupted, and then we're free to jump in after that. With that being said, is everybody ready? Okay. All right. Why don't you come on up then and let me know if you'd like to reserve any time for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. So what will happen is you see it's on 17 minutes now. It'll be counting down. And when it gets to 4 minutes, you'll get the yellow light and a tone to let you know that you've now gotten down to 4 minutes. But if you're still standing there, the clock keeps going.
Understood, Your Honor.
Okay, then. Please begin.
May it please the court, Michael Francisco for the Trump-Vance campaign, the Republican National Committee, the Nevada Republican Party, and Scott Johnson. It's probably not lost on this court that Nevada's upcoming election may decide the next U.S. president. The candidates and key surrogates are visiting Nevada on a weekly basis. The Senate election is once again hotly contested. Everyone benefits when contentious elections are decided in a manner that instills confidence in the ultimate results. Confidence is instilled when questions about the rules are decided before ballots are cast, not after. This case concerns an important but narrow question about a small set of ballots. Does Nevada count ballots that are received after Election Day without a postmark? The answer is a resounding no. Nevada revised statute 293.269921, the postmark provision, requires, and I quote, the mail ballot must be postmarked on or before the day of the election, end quote. If it's postmarked and received within 4 days, it's counted. Everyone agrees on this. So how do defendants get to a rule of counting ballots that are received after Election Day without a postmark? They take a narrow statutory exception for smudged postmarks and ask this court to hold that a smudged postmark is the same thing as no postmark at all. In so doing, defendants engage in a vast rewrite of Nevada's election law. This is contrary to the plain language of the statute, contrary to the legislature's chosen public policy. It is also a rewriting of the narrow exception in the statute for smudged postmarks, and it swallows the rule in overreading that exception. Plaintiffs, a presidential candidate, and two major political parties are uniquely injured by this illegal scheme, and thus a preliminary injunction is fully warranted. Plaintiffs thank this court for expediting consideration of this important question so it can be determined before the election. And I welcome this court's questions.
Well, counsel, when we look at the legislative history Assemblyman Frierson clearly stated that the intent of the statute was to include not only smudged or illegible postmarks, but also those that do not have a postmark by no fault of the voter. Occasionally, it could escape a postmark detection from the post office. So why would we not take that legislative history into account when we're construing the statute?
Thank you, Your Honor. It's an important question. First, I would say, just as a matter of law, this court doesn't look to the legislative history when the statute is unambiguous. All the parties in this case and the lower court didn't find the language of the statute unambiguous. Setting that aside, Assemblyman Frierson's comments that are in the briefs are really ambiguous at most. He's asked a question about the date of the postmark not being present, and he gives an answer that could be read multiple ways. However, you don't need to take my word on that. You can look at the rest of the legislative history, and this is cited chapter and verse in the reply brief. Assemblyman Frierson makes other statements that are much more clear in the legislative process for the same statutory language. He says, quote, the ballot must be postmarked on or before Election Day and received. And then later he said, a ballot that is postmarked up to and before Election Day is what is being considered by the legislation. There were additional comments from Legislative Council for Elections that reflect the same. And additionally, this court can look to the purpose that the legislature had in enacting this rule. And again, going to Assemblyman Frierson's own comments, he noted that one of the purposes of this important statute was to make it easier to catch ineligible voters and discount those ballots. So we think
the other purpose was to expand the freedom of Nevadans to vote. So what are we to do if a voter timely casts his or her ballot on or before the day of the election, and it simply is just not postmarked due to no fault of their own, then their votes would be discounted?
Your Honor, the Nevada legislature, with respect, has answered that question by drafting a statute that requires the presence of a postmark in order to count ballots that are received after Election Day. Now, I readily admit the legislature could have drawn a different policy when they wrote the law in Nevada, and they did not. They clearly require a postmark to be present, and that means that when a ballot lacks a postmark, it is not counted. That's the clear import of the statute. And when you compare...
The statute says, and the date of the postmark cannot be determined. So that can reasonably be read either that there is no postmark, right, or that it's illegible. I think there is some ambiguity there, and we can look to the legislative history. Because the legislature meant to say that only smudged or, you know, otherwise illegible postmarks, wouldn't they have just said that in the statute?
Your Honor, we don't think it is ambiguous on that regard. When it says the date of the postmark cannot be determined, the words "the postmark" are very clear that that mark has to be present. However, you could compare the use of the normal import of language in Nevada statute and the other states that allow the counting of ballots that come in after Election Day. And every one of those states makes clear that when a legislature wants to allow ballots to count when they do not have a postmark, they have ways to express that, and that's not what Nevada chose. In California, they say that they will count a mail ballot when it, quote, has no postmark, end quote. Oregon says, quote, if a postal indicator is not present or legible.
Counsel, are you saying that under this, under your reading of this statute, no mail ballots, regardless of when they're received, can be counted if they don't have a postmark?
No, Your Honor. Our claim is only about the ballots that come in after Election Day. That's the whole basis of this lawsuit.
How is there that distinction based on your reading of the statute?
The distinction is because our challenge is about the ballots that come in after election, which is what subsection 2 of the statute is about. The statute is written to require postmarks. Right. I understand that the other side has made an argument that our reading of the statute would imply right, that somehow ballots that come in before Election Day should not be counted. Let me give three responses to this, because it's an important point to keep clear. The first is that that's not our claim in this case, and if it were, there would be other statutory considerations, and in fact, I would believe if we made that sort of challenge, which again, my clients are not, then the state would come in and say that subsection A of the statute that allows ballots to come in through drop boxes, you can hand deliver a ballot under Nevada law before Election Day. That statute likely supersedes this language in the postmarking provision itself. That's number one. Number two is that you would have a hard time establishing the public interest and the other factors for preliminary injunction if you were challenging ballots that come in after election. Again, number three, the purpose of this law is to make sure that the ballots are cast on or before Election Day, and that's what this lawsuit focuses on. Of course, ballots that come in before Election Day should be counted. There's a metaphysical certainty that they were cast on or before Election Day. So we think that's, with respect, a red herring.
So why is, what significance is there to a piece of a mail ballot that comes in with no postmark on it versus one that comes in with a postmark but you can't read a date on it?
The significance, Your Honor, is that Nevada has carefully drawn its statutory scheme to require a postmark. That's the evidence on the ballot that it is cast in compliance with the law. Again, they did not have to choose that policy. Other states have not chosen that policy. Now, I'll offer a little bit more. Postmark is evidence that that ballot has gone through the mail. It's been handled by...
Are you questioning that something delivered by the post office didn't actually go through the mail because there's no postmark on it?
there certainly is not the same level of evidence that is handled in normal course through the mail. And so there's a greater confidence that voters have when you have something like a smudged postmark. There's a great example of that at Joint Appendix 178 of what it looks like. Now, you may want to draw, you may be inclined to write a policy that's different and that says that you can count ballots without a postmark, but that's just not what the law in Nevada says. It requires a postmark, and in the rare circumstances when a ballot does not have a postmark, the legislature has chosen that those ballots should not be counted, just like ballots that come in on day five.
The language that says it must be postmarked is in subsection 1 of the statute, correct?
Correct.
And in that statute, it starts with, except as otherwise provided in subsection 2, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then subsection 2 says, if the date of the postmark can't be determined, it's deemed postmarked on or before the day of the election, as long as it's received by 5 p.m. on the third day after.
Yes.
Okay.
We think that's very consistent, because by deeming it to have been mailed on or before the day of the election, subsection 2, the smudged postmark exception, it intentionally matches that small class of ballots with the general requirement in subsection 1 that says that a ballot has to be postmarked on or before the day of the election.
And, Council, you were talking about the, you know, the, in the rare instance that this happens. So that just, I'd like to just turn a moment to standing and what do you believe is the harm that will come to your clients if this statute is allowed to be carried out in the manner, or if the injunction doesn't issue? I guess we're here on an injunction. I'm struggling with the issue of standing, which was previously litigated in the Sagafsky matters. Can you just kind of go through why you think your clients have standing?
Yes, Sharon. I'll do my best to be brief and respond to both those points. The first is that we have standing on the basis of resource diversion. This is clearly established in the law, including the East Bay Sanctuary case, that when an organization has to divert resources due to government action that frustrates its mission, that gives rise to standing. Frankly, this case is no different than Mi Familia Vota or La Raza versus Sagatsky. Both of these had to do with organizational resource diversion in an election contest. It was training of individuals in Mi Familia Vota, and it was doing additional voter registration drives in La Raza. And our declarations in the record very clearly indicate what resources from these two organizations will be diverted, why they will be used, and importantly, how those resources are in addition and is a change from what the organization would otherwise be required to do. Any resource diversion that is caused by the government action creates an injury for standing under Nevada law consistent with federal case law. And indeed, that amount of resources need only be slight, is what the Crawford case says.
So what's the injury to your client's mission that would happen if somebody who mails their ballot that gets delivered by the post office is actually counted?
There's two levels of injury, Your Honor. One is the additional resources that my clients will have to expend in response to this government action. That's separate. A separate type of injury. Then there's an injury from the competitive harm that will come. That's the second type of standing that we have in this case. And again, in the Messina versus Hobbs case, it says that an unlawful regulation that makes the competitive landscape worse for a candidate than it otherwise would be, those injured parties have the requisite concrete, non-generalized harm to confer standing. And in this case, we have ample evidence that mail ballots and late arriving mail ballots in Nevada overwhelmingly favor Democratic candidates as opposed to Republican candidates. That creates a competitive injury for all of the candidates affiliated with both Republican parties and the presidential candidate. And so on a single ballot, you would presume that there's that same type of injury. All we have to show is that there is this competitive harm from the disparity and partisan lean on those ballots. And I would note, Your Honor, there is no contrary evidence in the record. And in fact, the state's own brief at page 15 summarizes how every election in Nevada since 2020 has had a greater proportion of Democratic ballots returned as opposed to Republican ballots. That makes this case, to return to your question, Your Honor, very different from the Burgess case. They did not have this type of specific evidence about the partisan harm in the Burgess case itself. And of course, that case should not apply for a more basic reason, that it was a broad federal constitutional challenge in federal court with different parties.
But we don't have evidence regarding what the lien is of pieces of mail that arrive without a postmark, do we?
Oh, I think you do, Your Honor, because all of the evidence from the class of ballots that are mail ballots returned to Nevada consistently, as a matter of the Secretary's own statistics, favor Democratic Party voters versus Republican Party voters. And the narrow class of ballots that we're challenging, ballots without a postmark, they're a subset of all mail ballots. It's not a particularly close call here. In every election since 2020, there have been more Democratic ballots returned by mail than Republicans. And there is no evidence whatsoever that that same trend would not apply to the smaller subset of the whole. So we think that's absolutely ample evidence that those ballots, albeit at a much smaller numerical scale than all mail ballots, but that is still sufficient to provide an injury to give us standing on the competitive harm theory. So you really have both of those theories of standing. It is quite a different case than the Burgess case, because it's a different type of claim, it is different parties, and the evidence here is important. We have very specific declarations, and we have a narrow state law challenge. The federal case does not narrowly focus on this state law issue. It has to do with mail balloting as a federal constitutional matter.
Do you want to reserve the rest of your time?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, I do.
Sorry, I'll catch him on the phone. Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm David Fox for the intervener defendants. I'm going to focus on the merits of plaintiff's statutory construction argument. Ms. St. Jules for the Attorney General's Office will then take on the remainder of the issues. Under Nevada law, mail ballots that are returned by mail, as opposed to a drop box or by hand, must be postmarked by Election Day and received by 5 p.m. on the fourth day after Election Day. But that postmark deadline creates a problem. It depends upon determining the date of the postmark. And for some very small percentage of mail ballots that are returned by mail, it is not possible to determine the date of the postmark. As the law's sponsor, Speaker Frierson, explained in committee, there are sometimes envelopes that were not postmarked or the postmark is illegible, smudged, or otherwise damaged to where it could not be read. And as Speaker Frierson also explained, the legislature crafted a rule to ensure that all of those ballots would be counted as long as they are promptly received. The legislature therefore provided a backup rule in subsection 2. If the date of the postmark cannot be determined, the ballot shall be deemed to have been postmarked by Election Day as long as it is received within 3 days after. This backup rule is phrased to perfectly capture the full set of ballots to which the primary rule, which requires a postmark by Election Day, cannot be applied. Nothing in that backup rule turns on why the date of the postmark cannot be determined. The result is a straightforward and complete set of rules for mail ballots returned by mail. If the postmark can be determined, then it must be postmarked before Election Day and delivered within 4 days. If it's postmarked after, it won't be counted. If the postmark date cannot be determined, then the tie goes to the voter and the ballot must be counted if it's delivered within 3 days. Plaintiffs ask the court to break up this straightforward system by artificially narrowing the backup rule so that it covers only ballots for which the date of the postmark cannot be determined because the postmark is, for example, smudged or torn, and not where there is no visible postmark at all. There are at least four serious problems with their reading. First, the reading is unsupported by the statutory text. The phrase cannot be determined is a broad one, covering any circumstance in which it is not possible to fix a postmark date for a particular ballot. Plaintiffs don't even seem to disagree with that. They acknowledge in their opening brief on pages 37 and 38 that a ballot with no postmark is more naturally described as being indeterminable, which is an obvious synonym of the statutory phrase cannot be determined. And it is natural to refer to a postmark date as the date of processing by the Postal Service. If I go to the post office after this argument and hand them a letter over the counter, it is natural to say that that letter was postmarked today, even if it happens that the postal worker forgets to apply a cancellation stamp and date. Everyone would understand what I mean.
Doesn't your reading take, I mean, if we credit your reading, we have to, essentially the statute saying the only ballot that needs a postmark to be counted is one that arrives 4 days after the election.
So, Your Honor,
collapse the statute into that by your reading.
So I disagree with that, Your Honor, because most ballots will always be postmarked. Most those ballots returned by mail will always be postmarked. So for the vast, vast majority of ballots, subsection 1 will still govern because the ballot will have a legible postmark date. And so that ballot will be counted if the postmark date is before Election Day or on Election Day, and it will not be counted, no matter what you think about subsection 2. It will not be counted if the postmark date is after Election Day. So this only affects a very narrow set of ballots.
I understand that, but the statute, the clause 1 says, except as otherwise provided in subsection 2, in order for a mail ballot to be counted, it must be postmarked on or before the date of the election. And then in subparagraph 2, you're saying, well, it doesn't need a postmark as long as it gets there within 3 days after the election. So the only ballot that would need a postmark is one that arrives 4 days after the election.
So that's true, but what I want to emphasize is that a voter does not control, no one controls, other than the post office, whether a ballot is postmarked. So it's not like a voter can choose not to have their ballot postmarked in order to benefit from subsection 2. It is a essentially random selection of post office errors that lead to a ballot falling into subsection 2. And then, yes, it is true that for any ballots that are subject to those errors through no fault of the voter, our reading is they will be counted if they're received by the third day after Election Day.
Could you comment on your opposing friend's argument that they don't need to argue that it has to be postmarked if it arrives earlier because it's covered under the subparagraph 1A. In essence, it's been hand-delivered. It's a physical fact that it is there. The post office delivered it. Do you think that saves their argument from textual and lack of clarity?
So, Your Honor, I don't think so, because the statute specifically and separately addresses in subsection 1A what ballots that are delivered by hand to the county clerk or to any ballot drop box established in the county pursuant to this section. And in subsection 1B, ballots that are mailed to the county clerk. And a ballot that is delivered without a postmark is quite obviously mailed to the county clerk and so subject to subsection 1B and not subject to subsection 1A. And so I do think that leaves them with this absurdity problem. They have no construction of the statute that explains why a ballot that is delivered before Election Day but through post office error has no postmark could be counted. They agree it has to be counted, but they have no answer to how the statute can be read that way. And we have a very simple answer to how the statute can be read that way, which is that the postmark date cannot be determined for that ballot, so it is counted under subsection 2.
I want to go back to subsection 2 and partly what Justice Pickering was referring to, but it seems that we're intermixing the idea of date and a postmark. When the section says the date of the postmark, doesn't that presuppose there's a postmark?
Your Honor, in the context of this...
How is that at all ambiguous in your mind?
So, Your Honor, in the context of this statute, I don't think it presupposes that there is a visible physical postmark. I think the date of the postmark can readily be understood to mean the date of processing by the Postal Service, which is, after all, what this whole concept is concerned with as a substantive matter. The idea is to determine whether this ballot was handed over to the Postal Service before Election Day or on Election Day. And so, in that context, I think it's very reasonable to say the date of the postmark means the date that the Postal Service processed it. And that cannot be determined if it's delivered by the post office, but there's no visible postmark. And so it naturally falls into subsection 2, where the legislature chose to provide that it will be counted if it's received within 3 days. And in that respect, it's no different from a ballot with a smudged postmark or a torn postmark, which provides no better information about when the ballot was handed over to the post office than a ballot with no visible postmark delivered by mail at all.
Is there anything in the record about why it would happen? Why would it happen that there would be mail ballots delivered that don't have a postmark on it? Do we know? Is there any evidence about that?
Your Honor, there's nothing in the record on that. I can say just from my general experience in this area, it's just the post office sometimes makes mistakes. They handle millions and millions of pieces of mail. They're working very quickly. Sometimes they miss a ballot.
And there's
nothing in the record to suggest that there's anything more to it than that.
Is there any evidence in the record to indicate that unpostmarked mail ballots are used for fraudulent purposes?
No, there is not. And I want to emphasize that it would be a very bad strategy for voter fraud. And so the legislature reasonably concluded that this was not a good concern. To start with, you need a valid ballot voted by an actual voter who has not otherwise cast a ballot. And if you have such a voter, you ought to have them submit their ballot on time because it's sure to be counted. Whereas if they submit their ballot late, then it is very, very, very likely not to be counted because it will almost certainly be postmarked after the date of the election and therefore not be counted. And so from the perspective of an individual voter, this would be a crazy way to attempt voter fraud. If you care about the results of the election, then vote your ballot on time. What happens? So the legislature therefore reasonably concluded that if they get a that if election officials get such a ballot shortly after election day, it is more likely by far that it was timely mailed and there was a postal service error, because it just wouldn't make sense for a voter to intentionally mail a ballot after election day. And there's nothing in the record to suggest that there's any actual evidence for voter fraud.
What about the states that have statutes like California that dispenses with the postmark requirement? Your reading and the practical and the policy arguments are sensible, but this statute requires a postmark.
Well, Your Honor, it requires a postmark date by election day unless subsection 2 applies. So I would dispute that. But the other thing I would say is I would urge Your Honor to look at these other state statutes. The fact is every state just does this a little bit differently. Some states treat the post, and some of the states they cite, say, well, the postmark, if available, is evidence of when the ballot was mailed, and it must be mailed by election day. Other states, each state just has a slightly different regime. It's not the case that there's sort of all these states and then Nevada. It's just each state handles this a little bit differently. There's a spectrum of solutions, but certainly Nevada's approach is not off.
But isn't the one that dispenses with the postmark altogether an outlier rather than mainstream? And Nevada's more mainstream in that it requires a postmark.
Well, again, I mean, I think that assumes that they are right about the text of the statute. In other words, if Nevada requires a postmark, then we agree Nevada requires a postmark. But our position, and we think the statutory text clearly provides, that it requires a postmark date to be before election day if you can determine a postmark date and not otherwise. So what I'm trying to convey is that rule that we are saying is what the statute says is a perfectly mainstream rule within the scope of the states. I think California is a little more extreme than that on one side, and you know, there are different ways of saying it. You can say the postmark date cannot be determined. You can list the reasons why the postmark date cannot be determined, which is what California does. There are a variety of options, but I think you end up in the same place regardless. So for all of those reasons and for the reasons that Ms. St. Jules will address, we ask the clerk to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Lena St. Jules on behalf of the Secretary of State and the State of Nevada. I won't repeat the points that Mr. Fox has already made. We agree with them. I'll focus instead on the APA claim, standing, latches, and necessary parties, but I'm, of course, happy to take any questions the Court might have. Plaintiffs assert an APA violation by claiming that the Secretary's interpretation in a memorandum was an improper regulation. First, with respect to the Secretary's authority to issue interpretations, the legislature was clear that if it gives authority to an agency to issue interpretations, that agency can issue interpretations that are not subject to the APA. Now, plaintiffs cite to cases that discuss interpretive rulings, but those are different from interpretations. Any agency can issue an interpretive ruling. Only agencies with authority to issue an interpretation can issue an interpretation. The legislature saw fit to grant the Secretary authority to issue interpretations for regulations governing the effective administration of the statutes and regulations governing the conduct of elections in Nevada. This is broad authority, and it clearly goes beyond any authority to issue any interpretive ruling. The Secretary has to send interpretations to all clerks, and that's under NRS 293.247, and that indicates that an interpretation isn't limited to specific and non-generalized facts, as would be the case for interpretive rulings. The Secretary's interpretations are to be broadly disseminated.
May I interrupt you for a moment? If let's assume for purposes of this question that we decide that the statute's not ambiguous and it doesn't cover no postmark mail-in ballots, how does that affect your evaluation of whether the memorandum violates the APA?
Well, I still think it's not subject to the APA. I know that the plaintiff cited to cases where regulations have to conform to the statute, and if they don't, then they're invalid. But this is an interpretation, and it's that's our position on it, so it wouldn't violate the APA on that basis. The Secretary exercised his authority to issue the memorandum. The memo clearly states it's provided for consistent and clear guidance regarding the interpretation of the postmark provision. It clearly identifies that it is not a regulation. We are not claiming that the memo has the force of law as a regulation would. We are not even asking for deference. At bottom, plaintiffs are just trying to write out of existence the legislature's clear grant of interpretive authority. Under their argument, the grant of authority would be entirely meaningless. So even if we were to construe the memo as a regulation, and I don't believe that's appropriate here, as Mr. Fox explained, as we agree, the memorandum is consistent with the postmark provision. And in fact, the organizational plaintiffs agreed with that until very recently. They stated as much in a lawsuit they brought against the secretary back in 2020. And this actually dovetails with another argument that the secretary has raised. This is the third time that the organizational plaintiffs have sued the secretary based on the exact language of the postmark provision. In the other two cases, they were dismissed for lack of standing. One of those cases is on appeal to the Ninth Circuit, but the other case was fully and finally concluded back in 2020. This is a textbook case for the application of issue preclusion. The question of standing is identical to the question of standing in the 2020 lawsuit. The organizational plaintiffs didn't have standing back in 2020, and they shouldn't be allowed to continuously bring litigation challenging the exact same language anytime they think they might have a new twist
but
on standing.
But now they come with a track record and they point to newspaper articles and statistics that of elections that late received ballots are skewing to the Democrat side. So doesn't that change, arguably, the standing analysis?
Well, one of the purposes of issue preclusion is to foreclose continuous litigation. And I think if we were to say that anytime somebody has a new fact that they can put before the court, that they can reopen an issue that's been finally decided, then you have a problem where you're completely rendering issue preclusion.
But if you're asserting preclusion, if the facts have changed, then it was not necessarily and actually litigated. I mean, preclusion is a pretty technical Katie bar the door doctrine.
I think the problem is that they chose to bring the lawsuit in the first place in 2020. They should have dismissed it if they knew they didn't have enough facts back then. But
wasn't that lawsuit based on an alleged violation of federal law?
Correct, yes. But the issue of standing is identical.
Doesn't standing depend on what the claims that are being asserted are?
Yes, and I think the claims are the same in terms of what the issue was for standing, right? The issue there was the Republicans claimed, again, that they had a competitive harm based on the language of the statute. That's what they're asserting here. It's the same issue of standing that's being determined in the context of the language at issue. The analysis is identical whether they're challenging it under federal law or state law. So I'll turn to the diversion of resources standing theory. So even if we set aside issue preclusion, I don't think the plaintiffs have standing here. The district court properly gave no weight to the declarations that plaintiffs submitted at the hearing. As we cited in our opening answering brief, this court held in State versus NOS Communications that the movement has to attach affidavits in support of a preliminary injunction to the motion. Otherwise, the motion is defective. This is a good and sensible rule so that the opposing party knows what evidence they'll have to meet in court. The plaintiffs brought the motion for a preliminary injunction, and they should have already known what evidence they needed to provide in order to support their allegations. Instead, they belatedly had declarations signed the day before the hearing. They didn't even attach them to the reply brief. And I don't think that's appropriate on a preliminary injunction motion under a State versus NOS Communications. But evidentiary questions aside, plaintiffs still don't allege a cognizable injury based on a diversion of resources. As we pointed out in our briefing, plaintiffs don't articulate any actual reason they would need to divert resources. There's no problem they're purportedly counteracting. And I know that Mr. Francisco cited to the La Raza case. I would point out that since the Supreme Court issued a decision in FDA versus Alliance versus Hippocratic Medicine, there has been a sea change in organizational standing. The Ninth Circuit just issued a decision, Arizona Alliance for Retired Americans versus Mays, 2024, Westlaw 4246721, and they overruled La Raza. They overruled the two-pronged inquiry. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to make 3 points briefly. The first, there's been arguments that it's out of the voter's control on whether a ballot lacks a postmark. That's not accurate, Your Honor. In the record, the only evidence it is that it is within the voter's control to postmark a ballot. That's what the guidance from the post office website says, and it tracks with common sense. The post office 2024 fact sheet just came out after the reply brief was filed. happy to file this as a supplemental authority after the argument. And it says the same thing that they said in the lower court record. A voter can ensure that a postmark is applied to his or her ballot by visiting any one of the more than 30,000 post office offices and requesting a postmark from a retail associate. Perhaps it is inconvenient, but it is certainly within the voter's control to do precisely what the defendant's instructions say. You have to postmark your ballot in order for the mail ballot to count. That's what the instructions unambiguously say. Second, I heard that it was natural to refer to a postmark when there's no postmark present. We don't think that's natural at all. However, I concede it is reasonable to choose to count ballots that lack a postmark. That is a legislative choice. I commend you. Please read all of the other state statutes.
Mr. Francisco, so if we had a service member from Nevada who was deployed overseas, how would they ensure that there was a postmark on their ballot?
Your Honor, may I?
Yes, go ahead.
Have a brief moment of response. That is controlled by the federal UOCAVA law, and there's a separate set of rules that apply to overseas service members who are returning ballots. That's just not governed by this. And if I may have a brief moment to summarize.
Brief.
Your Honor, if there's any doubt about what the statute means or concerns about the number of ballots, we would urge this court to consider ordering the segregation of ballots if it doesn't issue the injunction. It's within the power of this court to do, to order segregation, and then it can be litigated later, if necessary, on the legality of these ballots. That would address the irreparable injury and provide the certainty before election. This was discussed in the hearing below, and I thought it was worth highlighting that as an option for this court to consider. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.